So last week, we were exploring the four Satipatthanas, particularly the first establishment of mindfulness. And the Buddha uses this really evocative image of each Satipatthana, all four of them. The first one being the body, second establishment being Vedana or feeling tone, this innate response in the mind towards all sensory experience as pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant or unpleasant. This third establishment of the heart-mind and its various moods and thoughts and emotions and mind states. And then the Dhammas, really looking at what are the conditions that actually lead toward awakening? And what are the conditions that lead us away from awakening? Varying degrees of freedom. And he said, all four of these Satipatthanas are our ancestral home, our ancestral domain. Gil Fronsdale talks about it as our native land. And domain, there are all kinds of really fun synonyms for domain. And the one that I loved was home turf or stomping ground. So Venerable Anālio will sometimes translate this term domain, ancestral domain, or this phrase ancestral domain as our home turf, our native land. Just to remind you of the language that the Buddha used, the Buddha that's come down to us through the suttas. Move in your own resort, in your own ancestral domain. Mara will not gain access to those who move in their own resort, in their own ancestral domain. Stay at home in these four foundations, what the Buddha is saying. And it's when we stray outside of them that greed, aversion, and delusion start to fill the heart mind. Mara will not gain access to those who move in their own resort, in their own ancestral domain. This is beautiful. So by learning to rest at home with the body, as the body, feelings as feeling tones, as feeling tones, the mind as mind, dhammas as dhammas, we're using them to arouse mindfulness. And with that mindfulness, through just repeatedly staying at home with the body, let's just take this first establishment, with the body, repeatedly getting to know the body through mindfulness, we come into an honest relationship with the body, one that isn't deluded. We come to actually understand the true nature of the body. And this is what I love about the Satipatthana. So we're actually engaging in these practices that help arouse mindfulness, arouses mindfulness, it strengthens mindfulness. But then it also, with that mindfulness, we come to understand the nature of these four establishments of mindfulness. Just by staying at home, repeatedly seeing the nature of the body, we come to understand the true nature of the body. And then we come into our, what feels like to me, our inheritance. The promise that's laid out at the beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta. Here it is. This is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method for the realization of nibbana. Nibbana, just a heart mind free of greed, aversion, and delusion. For the realization of nibbana, namely the four Satipatthanas. just by staying at home, bringing mindfulness to this first establishment of mindfulness and the other establishments, but just let's just hang with the first establishment of the body. Just by bringing mindfulness, staying at home with the body, and through that process, getting to know the true nature of the body, we come into our full inheritance of freedom, purification, the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, the realization of nirvana, a heart-mind that's at peace, unagitated, at rest in itself, free to allow all the Brahma-viharas, all the paramis to just move through it and bless ourselves, our loved ones, people we don't even know, everyone that we come in contact with. Like, this is the promise of this path and practice, particularly the path and practice of Satipatthana. He calls it the direct path. So this first establishment of mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta consists of six practices. Mindfulness of the body breathing or the breath. Mindfulness of the body and its postures. A mindfulness of the body and its various activities. And then we come into three that are really... that reveal the nature of the body, anatomical parts, kind of scan we were doing earlier today, elements and cemetery contemplations. And you may have noticed what comes up for me when I'm doing the anatomical parts, scanning the body, just reminding the heart mind that this body is made up of skin, flesh, and bones. And reminding myself, oh, that this body is not inherently attractive or unattractive. And really feeling that directly as I feel skin or bones or flesh. It seems so laughable. Like you ask the question, like as you're connected with flesh, as you're connected with bones, as you're connected with skin. And you ask the question, attractive? Unattractive? I remember the first time I dropped that question into the heart mind and I just laughed because it seemed so ridiculous from that direct experience of skin, flesh, and bones. And what actually came to the fore was the elemental nature of the body. What we played with last week, what we were exploring last week, these characteristics of earth, heaviness, weight, seeming solidity, resistance, hardness, pressure, water, the wetness, liquidity, cohesion, that which binds the body, fire, varying degrees of coolness and warmth, and then air or wind element. So this quality of movement, pulsing, tingling, twinges, vibration, aliveness of the body comes to the fore when I drop in like attractive, unattractive. It's like, no, it's just the body's alive with this process. And then when we bring our awareness, like repeatedly see, contemplate the elements, we see like, oh, this is just a process. I'm not in control of this. This body is so dependent on like water in the form of beverage, earth in the form of food, shelter and clothing and heat in the as the fire element to keep the body warm, And then the wind element in terms of breath, like connecting us to life in a very primal way. You can go without food and water for some time. You can't go all that long without breath, without oxygen, without this fluid exchange between us and trees and plant life. The elements. So let's explore the anatomical parts. So as we were doing the meditation, you may have recognized that there's this benefit of using the body scans, which helps to, if a teacher calls it rooting mindfulness in the body, it almost feels to me like imbuing the body with sati, with mindfulness. And it's a reminder of seeing the body simply as made up of parts that have a function, which is to keep the body alive. And when we do the elements, or excuse me, the anatomical parts practice, not only are we aware of the functionality of these different parts, we're aware, like as we connect with their functionality, gratitude can arise. Oh, aware of lungs that support this body in breathing. Oh, aware of skin that like regulates temperature. Aware of teeth, nails. Heart. So in this practice, we're letting go of the tendency, our tendency to idealize bodies, only focusing on those qualities that are deemed attractive, or only focusing on the external to the exclusion of those parts that are deemed unattractive or the internal parts of the body. So this is a passage. I'll read you a passage from the Majjhima Nikaya Satipatthana Sutta that talks about these anatomical parts, 31 or 32, the 32nd part being the brain. Sometimes it's included in this list, sometimes it's not. In this list, it's just the 31 parts of the body. In the guided meditation that we did together earlier, we simplified these 31 parts down to just skin, flesh, and bone. Did the body scan. Again, this is Venerable Anālio's approach to working with the anatomical parts. In the suttas, this is the practice that's recommended. One reviews the same body up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the head, bounded by skin and full of many kinds of impurity thus. In this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails. And as you hear these parts, just connect, as you hear these words, connect with your direct experience as best as you're able with these different parts of the body. In this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. Not the most savory list, right? Can't we just focus on her beautiful hair or her flawless skin or that person's bones? No, the Buddha's like, let's look at the body in its entirety. And this is just to counterbalance the habit of trying to make the body beautiful and focusing only on the external or only on those parts that our culture has taught us to see as beautiful. We're asked to contemplate the parts that are deemed unattractive. But this practice isn't about inspiring disgust for the body. And you'll see this in the sutta, this next part of this contemplation, where the body is actually compared to a bag of grains. There's freedom in this. Just hear this. The Buddha says, just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends, full of many sorts of grains, such as hill rice and red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice, and a person with good eyesight were to open it and review it thus. In this is hill rice, this is red rice, these are beans, these are peas, this is millet, this is white rice. So too, a practitioner reviews the same body. So as we're contemplating the body, contemplating these 31 parts, bones, bone marrow, kidney, heart, diaphragm, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil at the joint, urine, we're to contemplate it, this body, as if it were a bag of grains. Like, it's so simple and it's so genius of the Buddha, because in this simile of comparing the body to a bag of grains, he's implying an attitude towards the body. That as we would contemplate a bag of grains, desire would not be aroused. Aversion wouldn't be aroused. There wouldn't be craving for like hill rice. So sexy. hill rice, look. Right? You're looking at these bag of grains and the beans and the rice in a balanced way. There's this neutrality. And as we review the, and you can hear in the list of the 31 parts that it moves from the external to the internal. As we contemplate the body from the external to the internal, start to touch into these unattractive aspects of the body, we do it in a balanced way as if we were looking at a bag of grains. We regard the body's attractive and unattractive aspects and the heart-mind simultaneously. And this allows us to stand in relationship to the truth of the body with a balanced attitude. So we're not grasping at bodies, lusting after other people's bodies, kind of admiring different parts of our own body that we've been trained to admire because we have, the culture has imprinted, the culture that we've been raised in has imprinted us with ideas of beauty. My father's from Liberia. He was born in 1954. And the ideas of beauty, feminine beauty, that he was raised with, very different from the ideas of feminine beauty that I was raised with. So for him, broad lips, thick lips, broad nose, dark skin, tightly coiled hair, brown eyes, big bones, shapely, like that was the imprint of beauty That was the concept of beauty. That was the idea of beauty that was imprinted on his heart and mind. For me, light skin, thinner nose, thin lips, straight hair, brown to blue eyes, thinner in frame. These are just ideas of beauty that have been shaped by geography, culture that we live in, economics, power structures, right? So we take these ideas to be the truth when they're just shaped by these various conditions. So with this practice of the anatomical parts, we're actually stepping out of our conditioning around the body, the ways that we've been conditioned to see bodies. And as the sutta says, we're contemplating the body as a body. We're contemplating the body as anatomical parts. And connecting with those anatomical parts, and as if we were contemplating and reviewing a bag of grains, is genius. It frees us from so much. So we're not grasping after bodies, judging bodies, rejecting bodies. We're actually learning to genuinely care for the health and well-being of our own body and the bodies of others, and having an appreciation for their functionality, absent of craving and aversion. In fact, the capacity to actually care for all bodies is due to the absence of craving and aversion and delusion, right? When we take on the anatomical parts practice, we're purifying our view. We're purifying our view of all the ways we've been acculturated to relate to bodies. This helps not only in terms of sensual desire, it helps us to understand, say, racism in its overt and subtle forms. So during the anatomical parts practice, we're contemplating flesh, bones, and then we come to skin, right? And then we see that, oh, this is just skin. We tap into the direct experience of skin and its functionality. Skin as an organ. Skin as an organ that regulates temperature. Skin as an organ that serves as a barrier against pathogens, bacteria. Skin as an organ that protects us from the sun's ultraviolet rays. Skin as an organ that is really sensitive and lets us know and learn things about our external environment. What skin does not innately have, or certain, it doesn't have the power to imbue us with certain qualities and characteristics as we've been taught to kind of think in this culture. However, and this is just my opinion, I think racism functions through and is dependent on, predicated on, the faculty of perception. So the suttas define perception in a very specific way that's different from how we use the term perception in English. So sometimes we think of perception as this ability to see, hear, and be aware of something through the senses. Now, depending on what is meant by becoming aware, or becoming aware of something through the senses, the suttas might think of that as consciousness or mindfulness, depending on how you're using or what you mean by this phrase, becoming aware. So in English, this term perception has a specific meaning that's very different from how perception is used and defined in early Buddhism and in the suttas. So perception is this faculty of mind that forms concepts that help us to recognize, helps us to name, and helps us to categorize our experience, our moment-to-moment experience, our sense-door experience, so that we know how to relate to and navigate our sensory world. Perception isn't a bad thing. We need perception. It helps us to make sense of our moment-to-moment experience. It's the process of matching our current sense-door experience, so sense-door experience, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, thoughts, and emotions. It's matching our current sense-door experience with experiences from our past. And this process of perception can be verbal. Most of the time, it feels to me that it's nonverbal and that it operates with a rapidity. It's lightning rapid. And we've been trained through like inculcation to associate certain qualities with skin tone, certain qualities with physical characteristics. So let's just take this notion of like race and racism and perception. So there's contact. Let's take the eye door, consciousness or awareness that allows us to see, and then the object, in this case, skin color. Right? So there's contact between these three things arising in the same moment. So eyes, consciousness, skin color. Contact. With contact, there's some feeling tone. It could be pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant or unpleasant. Then perception arises, right? Perception occurs around this particular object of skin tone. So there's the recognition, the naming, and the categorization. And then there's all the thinking and all of our association, all of our thinking and all of our proliferation around the associations we have with that particular skin tone, which then gets projected onto someone. And our perceptions and our associations, sometimes they're accurate, sometimes they're not. And yet we can be so convinced that our perceptions are really accurate. So when the policeman, police officer Timothy Lohman shot Tamir Rice in 2014, the officers called into dispatch and they said, shots fired, male down, black male down, maybe 20. Tamir Rice was 12 years old. He was playing with a replica. He was playing with a replica toy gun. Misperception. This is from Venerable Analio. In a way, we live in a world of our own construction. And this construction is in large part based on our expectations and biases. These appear to us as if they were an integral part of what is out there, rather than merely being the result of our own subjective projections. So how we perceive our sense door experience is shaped by conditioning, biases, expectations, our current mind state, where our attention has been resting in the past and where it's resting in the present moment. This is from the Satipatthana Sutta. In this way, I'm going to change the gender. She abides contemplating the body as a body internally. One approach is to think of internal as our own body, external as the body of others. So in this way, she abides contemplating the body as a body internally, or they abide contemplating the body as a body externally, or he abides contemplating the body as a body both internally and externally. So we contemplate the body as a body, not our ideas, not our biases, not the ways that we've been acculturated to see our own bodies and the bodies of others, but the body as a body, the body as made up of these anatomical parts that have a function that we can be so grateful for. And it helps us in the process of contemplating bodies as bodies, especially contemplating the anatomical nature of our own bodies and the anatomical nature of other people's bodies. It intervenes on this perception, proliferation, and projection process. It helps us to retract the projections and just see the bodies of others as a collection of anatomical parts, as a collection and expression of elements of earth, water, fire, and wind. Through the anatomical parts practice and the elements practice, we're just inculcating the fact, the true nature of the body, which again changes our perceptions so that we're no longer projecting these false biases and expectations and ideas onto other people's bodies and our own bodies, so that we can have a more balanced attitude towards all bodies that's just free of greed, aversion, and delusion. I'm smiling because I thought for sure that we would get to cemetery contemplations tonight. It's just not going to happen. There's too much to share about the cemetery contemplation part, but this is another practice that is where we get to bring mindfulness and discover the true nature, discover one aspect of the body's true nature. The fact that this body eventually will die and fall apart, and that we are moving towards that, and that that is not a mistake. It's just nature doing what it does. But we'll explore that in more detail next time we get together. We do have time for some reflections or questions. Maybe we have some time to do another body scan around that bring us into a direct relationship with the nature of the body, the true nature of the body. Starting to turn the heart toward, attune to, and resonate with the true nature of the body and the anatomical parts and the elements being a gateway to help us to understand the true nature of the body. So happy to just open it up, have a discussion around this. You might think this is the oddest practice ever. I'm happy to hear that and connect with that, engage with that. Questions you might have, maybe that was what I just shared was as clear as mud, and you'd like some clarification. Hi, Charles Lee. It's good to see you.
Hi, Donna. Hi again. Wow, that was a lot of information. My head is spinning, but so first of all, the practice was really the combination of the body scan and really getting beneath, you know, the skin and beneath the skin. And I've listened to Analio's, I think it's on the Barry Center Study site. And I've had a chance to listen to that myself. It's really powerful. And that's just, I guess, like functional. I guess my body is what I think is functional and operating. I don't have a chronic illness or something like that. But and then when you touched upon kind of death meditation, that's what actually where I first was exposed to kind of the elemental or meditation on the elements, walking through how the elements kind of break down or leave the body. In the dying process, but I think I also practice Christianity, and so this is Lent, where Jesus went on retreat, and Ash Wednesday we do ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
So and I when really you say Jesus that. Went into retreat, is that when he went into the desert?
Yeah, for 40 okay. days. Yeah. 40, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And during that time, he was visited by Satan. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was tempted, okay. The three temptations of Christ. And, mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, so
very similar to the relationship between Buddha and Mara.
Exactly.
But you were saying this is the season of Lent.
Yeah, so it's just the dust to dust, ashes to ashes kind of death meditation. That's something mm-hmm. that's said at funerals and at least in Episcopalianism. And then just lastly, I think in some ways our society does this. Is definitely Western medicine sees the body like this. I know in medical training, medical students are trained to view the body divorced from any passion in order to be able to, physically examine people, in order to, and to not, most doctors don't, become attracted to their patients. You hear those stories, but I find it, it'd be interesting to do this with people who work in the medical field.
It's also it's also fascinating to just do it here. Like we have this opportunity to just mm-hmm. remind ourselves of skin, flesh, bones. And again, the Buddha is really explicit. We contemplate the body as a body externally or internally first, externally, and both internal, external, internally, externally. It's such a, we have an opportunity to actually practice this in community with each other, whether it's here on Zoom or when we're at a grocery store, just reminding ourselves, bones, as your eyes land on other people, skin, you're just playing with this now. As our eyes land on each other, oh, flesh, heart, like heart beating in Corey's chest, Charles Lee's chest, Marion's chest, my chest, lungs, Sarah's lungs, Linda's, bones, Bill, Barbara, Jerome. Can't see y'all, Rebecca and Alice, but I know you're behind there and I know you got bones. Just reminding ourselves of this truth while we're in community with each other. I'm grateful that art has lungs, skin, and flesh. Supports him in being alive. Grateful for my own. And we can feel our interconnection with each other through this practice. Yes, Barbara.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you talking about reminding ourselves, because I thought the comment about the Western medicine was very interesting and very good, because I think doctors do this, but a lot of them compartmentalize.
Mm.
Still sucked into the whole delusion of the body and attractive. And I used to know doctors quite well. I was married to one, and I noticed that this real compartmentalization. And I feel sometimes I do that myself too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I get caught up in the delusion, and that faculty of somehow being able to remind oneself, you know, yes, this is the way it is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's such a simple thing. We just forget to remind ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Sarah. You're on mute, my friend.
Here we go. So what I love is what you just said. It is when I am in the grocery store, when I am walking down at Spirit Rock on the way to lunch, I know what I usually look at in all of those situations. I'm very aware of where the eyes go, what I'm looking for. I mean, I look at gait a lot, but to just start actually thinking about heart, not meta heart.
Mm-hmm.
Blood, you know, lungs, everybody's breathing. It is wonderfully unifying and wonderfully moving it all into neither pleasant nor unpleasant.
It just is, right?
Yeah, it's moving it out of judgment, and it's moving it out of that pleasant, unpleasant sphere. It's moving it into neither pleasant nor unpleasant, universally held, very. I like it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You said unification. Like, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it, so how am I going to, in a certain way, what it, I'm not going to have good words for this because I
have fun.
What it does is, it's going to sound weird, but it really helps with not no self. It really helps with the idea that we're all, I mean, it takes it back to earth. It takes it back to all of us being interconnected, all of us being not just interdependent, but actually dependent upon the earth, just dependent on gravity.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long way to jump this brain.
No, I hear it. I feel you.
It really... it grounds that. It takes the personal out. It brings in not a moving away from, rather a recognition. You don't have to move. It's a recognition of what's shared. So it's not moving toward or away from. It is just a recognition of that which we all share. Okay, so.
Yeah, I really like the connection that you're making around not self. Because that points to all the ways we construct a sense of self around our bodies and the bodies of others.
Right? Uniqueness as opposed to sameness.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
What makes us special as opposed to what makes us share. Share this business of living with everything and everybody without having to move, without having to deny distinction, but to acknowledge all that
what's underneath the various distinctions, which is we all got skin. It's just different tones.
Right.
We all have hair. It's just different textures. We all got teeth. Some of us have more or less of them. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it's very simple, easy, to be practiced almost everywhere. It doesn't have to be a meditation done only in meditation.
That's right.
And walk, yeah. Talk to us. It's great. Thanks.
It is great. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, John.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'm zooming in from Texas. And Charles Lee, it's good to see you. I sit with you at the Portland Zen center sometimes virtual.
So cool. So I love Zoom.
I guess so. But I just really appreciated the discussion of the kanda of perception. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk on that live. Talk on that live is the kanda of perception is this process of categorizing and miscategorizing the things that we come across in our experience and applying it specifically to the Tamir Rice shooting. That was really compelling. What I wanted to comment on kind of connects with what Sarah was saying. And that is in the connection with the Zen tradition, the miscategorization that the Zen tradition, I would say, focuses on most is categorizing humans, ourselves, as distinct from other animals, and even the totality of the natural world.
That's so, right.
You know, it's a very profound miscategorization.
Yeah, it is.
You know, maybe evolutionary definitely, you know, comes from our philosophical and religious background in the West, but it's very, very powerful, even if you're never indoctrinated specifically. I was here a couple weeks ago and appreciated what you said about the element meditation, also with a kind of awareness of interdependence. It kind of resonates.
Yeah, actually, as you were talking about how we see ourselves as distinct in this miscategorization, this misperception, feeling ourselves separate and perhaps even sometimes superior to all of life manifesting as like plants and animals, nature. It reminded me of the elements practice and how the elements practice can help us to heal that the wounding that's happened around that misperception and can actually start to kind of straighten our view, start to help us step out of that misperception to see ourselves not only in relationship to nature, but actually of nature. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Thank you, John. Thank you. Pita, and then we should move on to Metta.
Yeah, this will be very quick because it's not very well formalized. There's something freeing about looking at the unity of us all. Mm-hmm. It somehow takes it away from our, which at least some of our upbringing, from self-absorption, mm-hmm. from looking at the self. Mm-hmm. As I said, it's not well formalized.
No, I so feel you on this.
It somehow takes it away from selfing, from self-centering, mm-hmm. from ego. It just, mm-hmm. I'm just part of all of us.
That's right. That's right.
So anyway, it for this exact moment, it feels good.
And that's like,
I guess.
Say that one more time.
Freeing of self.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you're naming the felt sense of how wholesome it feels, how good it feels, that it's not agitating to connect to the absence of self or the thinning of self when we start to feel our interconnectedness through these practices of the anatomical parts and elements and the cemetery contemplation too. And I mean, again, the promise of the Satipatthana Sutta, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent. That's all wholesome and beautiful. Lovely.